Is doing the will of the Father the food that sustains you? Remember, Jesus said that about himself, that he said, I have food of which you do not know. My food is to do the will of the one who sent me and to finish his work. And I've been preaching about how we should be preoccupied with God's will in a similar way, that's what sustains us. That's what keeps us going. Jesus here, what we see in this gospel is he is tirelessly doing the Father's will. In this case, there's a lot of healing and deliverance ministry. And this is Jesus is very generous in how he is available to everyone. He's always trying to get away to pray, and often stopped by the crowds who he looks at them and sees them as sheep without a shepherd. And he serves them, he preaches to them. So in this case, they brought, when it was evening after sunset, they brought to him all who were ill or possessed by demons. He cured many who were sick with various diseases and drove out many demons. Now, I don't know about you, but when it's after sunset, when it's evening after a long day of work, what I really like is when people bring all the possessed people to my house. And I'm like, oh, good, now I can cast out some demons. I was just hoping for that. Right? But Jesus is available. He's ready to do battle. He's ready to do the Father's will. Of course, we know deliverance ministry, deliverance from the oppression or the influence or whatever level of attack from evil spirits, that is part of the church's healing ministry. So that's kind of why they're lumped together. He healed those who were ill or possessed by demons. Healing is about being made whole. Being made whole. And that healing and that wholeness comes from Jesus, who confronts and ejects demons. Also, illness itself, which is just physical illness, is an evil thing. Jesus also confronts that and sends that away. So the healing and the wholeness that he brings in some cases is physical. Well, I shouldn't say that. In some cases, it's physical and spiritual. In some cases, it's just spiritual. There's like inner healing that may not have an accompanying physical healing, but often it does. Or it's not unusual that it does. So if somebody's been afflicted with, I don't know, some autoimmune thing, then they go through this incredible inner healing, they forgive whoever it was, they experience God's love, and they have a new inner healing. It's not unheard of that they will no longer have that autoimmune issue. Okay, because why? Jesus heals. He brings wholeness. And every physical healing is accompanied with some deeper spiritual healing, because why? Well, God just healed my physical ailment. I guess he does love me more than I thought. It's God's love that brings healing. So Jesus is doing this. He's doing the Father's will. He's setting the captives free. He's making the broken whole. He is unstoppable because he is God. And he's super generous. And then everyone is looking for you. And he says, let's go on to the nearby villages that I may preach there also. For this purpose I have come. So he is going to continue to the next village to continue to preach the word and to bring the kingdom. He is the kingdom, but he's bringing the kingdom into people's lives. So does Jesus have time to heal everyone? Does he have time to preach to everyone? Absolutely not. He leaves these people. There's more people looking for him. He doesn't say, well, we got to wait until we're done here. He's one man. He's one God man. He's physically limited himself to this. What's his plan? The apostles, who he will send out later to do what he does. his disciples, those who will follow him, those who he has invited into this ministry and into this work, to whom he said, my food is to do the will of the one who sent me and to finish his work. And we also are supposed to have that same attitude in ourselves. What is Jesus' spiritual food? Doing the will of the Father. What is our spiritual food? Primarily Jesus himself. He is our spiritual food. In his word, in his presence, and especially in the Blessed Sacrament, in the Eucharist, where he says, I am the bread of life. But as we receive the bread of life, as we receive Jesus in the Eucharist, we become so one of mind and heart with him that we take on his dispositions and his attitudes. We love how he loves, and what fuels him fuels us. Doing the will of the Father will fuel the person who really is feeding on Jesus and bringing Jesus to the center. Now, if you were here at Christmas, you heard me preach about I was using the monstrance as an example for how you are made. So everybody knows what a monstrance is, right? During Eucharistic adoration, the Blessed Sacrament is placed in the center of the golden or some kind of precious metal, but the vessel that's called a monstrance, right? It's got a big hole in the middle that is shaped like Jesus. Okay, there's a specific like piece that fits only right in the center, all right? And the monstrance is placed on the altar, or the priest or the deacon processes around with the Eucharist, processes around, and Jesus, we're worshiping him, we're adoring him, but we're also being blessed by him. This has a lot of connection to the Old Testament with the bread of the presence. And if you read Brant Petrie's Jewish Roots of the Eucharist book, you hear a lot more about that. But that golden vessel, that monstrance that holds the Eucharist at the center, you are kind of like that. You are kind of like, that's what I said at Christmas. But if you noticed at Christmas, it was only part one of the homily because I didn't say the real full purpose of a monstrance. Because what I said was the purpose of a monstrance was to hold Jesus at the center. Right? And you also are made to have Jesus at the center. He doesn't fit anywhere else but at the middle. But that's not really the purpose of a monstrance, is it? It doesn't just hold Jesus at the center. What is the actual purpose? To show him. Which is literally what the word monstrance means. It comes from a Latin word that means to show. So if you put Jesus in the monstrance and put the monstrance in a closet, that totally defeats the whole purpose of it. It's like hiding your light under a bushel basket, which will catch the thing on fire and burn the house down, I suppose. It seems like a terrible idea, which is why Jesus used that image, I think. You don't put a light under a bushel basket. You put it on a lampstand so it gives light to all in the house. I don't put the Eucharist in a monstrance and then put the monstrance in a closet, because that doesn't show anyone Jesus. No. The Eucharist goes at the center of the monstrance, and the monstrance is this vessel worthy to hold him, specifically made to hold him, and to show him to others. And you are like that. You are not unlike that. That you are to show Jesus to others. And that's how you're made, that's how you're designed, that's part of God's will. Now, I don't know about you, but when I go somewhere, I'll just use a recent visit as an example. My uncle, I have an uncle who's very ill, who's in the hospital in Flint, and I went up there to visit him. Now, when I got there, one of his daughters and her husband was there, my aunt was there, their kids were there, and we had a lot of great conversations. We caught up about some things. He's a police officer in Flint, so we caught up some things about his work. I used to be a police chaplain in Flint. And we talked about the Lions losing. And he told his daughter to take off her Lions hat. She kept putting on her Lions hat. He's like, take that off. We talked a lot about the Lions losing. We talked about, of course, my uncle's health. You know, and I talked to him. He can't talk. He has a trach in right now, but We talked about the weather and how nice it is. We talked about whatever else. And we talked about all these things, all right? And I don't know about you, but in these situations, my temptation is to show up and to be present and to bring myself. And then, you know, and I mean, really be there and say, oh gosh, how are you doing? How's your health? What's the update? Okay, well, I'm praying for you. And then to leave. And I want to say this. If you show up and you bring yourself and you love people, I mean, that is really good. I don't think God wants us to see, it's in seminary, we called it the ministry of presence, which sounds a little weird the more Catholic you are, because presence really makes you think of Jesus' presence. But anyway, your presence, your loving presence is good. And it supports people. And I think if we don't bring that, then who cares what else we bring or what else we say. But we're not there just to bring that. Because if you're a monstrance and you're empty, what's at the center? I mean, if you don't have Jesus there, if you don't bring Jesus, it's just emptiness in the middle. So did Jesus send the apostles out to just bring their loving presence and kind concern to people? No, what a waste of time in a certain way. Like, now when you talk about your family, less so. But he sent them out to bring his presence, his word, his love, and his power. Okay, so do you go out? I don't know if it's a family visit or if it's, I don't know, wherever you go. Do you go out like a monstrance processing out? Like, you know, Eucharistic procession? You got the whole entourage of servers. You know, there's the incense guy. He's, you know, we do this every year on Corpus Christi. You got the candles, and then you have the deacon or the priest who's carrying Jesus. Some places they do this through the streets. We don't do that here. It's way, way too dangerous. Imagine going down Dexter Pinckney Road. I don't think so. But in some places they go through the streets. New York City, they do it. All through Manhattan. Some of the coolest. Recently, they did one, actually, there in the Archdiocese of New York. And when I say you're not unlike the monstrance, what I mean is, like, when they're doing a Eucharistic procession, they are going with a purpose. We're going to bring Jesus literally to the streets. And we're going to show. This is what we're doing. And so with us, when we go to visit our families in the hospital or wherever else, that we're going out like a monstrance, like in a Eucharistic procession. I'm there to bring Jesus. So after all of these conversations, I didn't stop there. My aunt actually shared something about my uncle's prayer life, which I thought was really encouraging. And so I read John 15 and part of John 16. I gathered everybody around, read a couple chapters of the Bible, and then I led the family in prayer. Where, you know, I prayed and then I invited everybody else to pray, and his granddaughters were all praying for him, which was really, that's the powerful prayer right there, okay? It's the grandchildren. And everybody prayed, and we, because why? Because I'm there to bring the presence of Jesus, the power of Jesus, the words of God. That's why I'm there. Not to the exclusion of myself, especially when you're talking about family. That matters too. And even if you're not talking about family, your loving presence is good and is necessary. But like the apostles that Jesus sent out, he sent them out with his loving presence, his power, his words. So with us, to be willing to say, Lord, you know, on the way, for instance, this is what I will do on the way to the hospital, and that's, McLaren is an hour away from here. I will be praying and asking the Lord, Lord, you know, what do you want to do? What do you want to do when I get there? Okay? Listen. All right. And then go and show up and encounter whoever is there. And then on the way back, Lord, how did that go? Was that what you wanted? What do you want to say to me about this, and also to maybe intercede a little bit and to pray for the person you just visited or the conversation you just had, to lift that up in prayer so that we're pursuing the will of the Father wherever we go. And you might be able to take several minutes, or if you have lots of little children, you might be able to take several seconds, you know. But what's important is that we do that. Because if we don't reflect on it and ask the Lord, was that what you wanted? Was that good? Sometimes when I do that, I immediately know, oh, I didn't really engage. Other times, I sense the Lord's very pleased with that, and that was good, but I need to pray a certain way for the person, so I do. That's not uncommon. I'll be on the way back from the hospital visiting someone, and I'll be praying a certain way. And that's one of the ways we practically do the will of the Father. How do I do that? Well, on the way, consider yourself as a monstrance in a Eucharistic procession, bringing the power of Christ, and ask him what he wants. What do you want to do here? And on the way back, Lord, was that what you wanted? We're pursuing his will. We're, in a way, preoccupied with his will. That is the food that sustains us. And the more that we do that, like anything else, the more that we feed off of it. And the more that we say, you know what? I don't need me time as much, or some of the things that I feel like sometimes, some of the other times I need, I don't feel like I need those the same way, because doing God's will is so satisfying, my heart is full. I don't know about you, but if I get sent to a place, you know, when your schedule is full, and your calendar is full, and your heart is empty, you know, that's when you're behind on am I doing God's will and loving it? And so it's okay if the calendar is full and the schedule's full, as long as my heart is full, right? And when Jesus says that those words, my food is to do the will of the one who sent me and to finish his work, he's like, I'm not even hungry. Like, I'm not even physically hungry right now, because my heart is so full because I'm doing the Father's will. That's the disposition that he wants us to have. And it comes from, of course, prayer and, you know, our saying, Lord, what do you want? Do it. Lord, was that what you wanted? And how should I pray? And we are sent out to do these very things and to bring the presence and power of Christ and to accomplish the will of the Father.